Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Season 8, episode 116. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. And sitting in for David Todd on this Friday once again is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday. 6 weeks from today, you'll probably have be on the way to Latrobe in the McLubina for, a second day.
Yeah, well, either pushing it, having a tow, or driving it. She's getting inspected, I think, next week, so we'll see how that goes then.
You may. I don't want to hear about that McLumina breaking down now. So you got to do what you got to do over the course of the next 6 weeks to get that get that thing running like Justify during the
Triple Crown.
The Triple Crown run there. Okay. Oh Lord, it feels like Christmas, for us on off-season edition of the Terrible Podcast. You and I spent 90 minutes before the show started planning out this show and talking about all the topics and Lord, we can go. Our planning meeting included us discussing all the different ways this show could go today, that stems from and obviously we don't spend 90 minutes. 90 seconds, more like it. But look, I mean, there is a lot to talk about. I mean, with mandatory minicamp wrapping up on Thursday, and we talked a little bit I think the other day about how we were going to hear from some of the position coaches and all, this week, and that indeed happened. We have a lot of really kind of sound bites to talk about. Maybe some hyperbole to talk about from a beat writer or two as well. But I thought maybe we'd start off with some breaking news that happened, or came across really last night. Thursday night, and that concerns former Steelers wide receiver Martavis Bryant, of course, now a member of the Oakland Raiders, and apparently there is some fear now that Bryant is facing, some discipline of some kind, and we don't know what that some kind is. Is it him maybe not, setting up proper counseling or whatnot that they're in the Oakland area? Is it related to him maybe missing another drug or missing a drug test? Is it him failing a drug test? I think it's too early to tell at this point. But I mean, as Michael Gelkin of the Las Vegas Journal Review wrote, there's fearful that he's going to miss some time, and it's going to be very, very unfortunate for him. It's just another reason I think why I was absolutely stunned that not only the Steelers were able to trade Martavis Bryant, that first night of the draft, but they got a third round draft pick for him as well. I mean, you're talking about a guy that, you had to wonder if he had all of his past issues off the field behind him. And the second part is, he's in the final year of his current contract as well, too. And it's so many things made you believe that there was no way the Steelers were going to trade Martavis Bryant this offseason. And you throw in the top of that Kevin Colbert saying he wasn't going to trade Kevin Colbert. But look, I mean, if you get offered a third-round pick like he was offered, heck, you got to take that deal and run. Very unfortunate for Bryant. And look, this is a guy that I've said all along, man, he runs like a gazelle when he's on the field, and there are traits that he's had at certain times during his career where you think, man, this guy maybe could be the next Randy Moss. And then you see kind of not only the stuff that's happened off the field with him, but then you see, I mean, look, he wasn't prime Martavis Bryant last year, especially with the deep ball. And now you have to think to yourself, man, I'm glad he's not the Steelers' problem anymore.
Right, absolutely, Dave. You know, on a personal note, it's sad and it's unfortunate, and I hope that whatever Bryant's dealing with, he gets the help and can hopefully just make a good life change. But, you know, like you said, Dave, this is why it was so surprising that Oakland gave up so much to get Bryant. And even best-case scenario, not even talking about the potential with the distractions and the suspensions and the substance abuse history, but best-case scenario, you know, Bryant has a great year for Oakland, and then his contract's up, and then he's going to get, you know, paid on the market, and the Raiders could lose him, or they're going to pay out the nose to keep him. So, you know, that always made it curious why Oakland gave such a pretty penny, a third-round pick, to deal for Bryant in the first place. And then, you know, like you said, this assumed risk of, you know, where he's been with his history of suspensions, two of them already. And, you know, you're right, that Las Vegas Journal report does not really concretely say what it is. It does say it's with a substance abuse issue, so I'm assuming it's either a missed test, which is considered a failed test, or an actual failed test. And while it's hard to parse the language of some of the suspensions and what the discipline would be, I'm working under the assumption that if he gets suspended again, it's going to be at least another year, which would wipe out, you know, obviously all of 2018 for him.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Ian Rappaport has something out there. Maybe it's some sort of paperwork issue or something along those lines. Look, I mean, you'd have to think that he probably still has a lot of hoops to jump through right now, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, when we saw that before he got officially reinstated with the Steelers, you know. So maybe it's something as simple as that. But let me tell you, you know, I don't know if you've followed in the past his girlfriend, you know, the mother of his child or whatnot on Twitter and all, but boy, she's been very open about the weed smoking and you know, things like that in the past on social media. And man, if you don't surround yourself with good people all the time, and you have issues, you know, addiction issues, and look, nobody knows that more than I do, you know. But your support system is huge. We saw the Steelers try to do their best, you know, with support issues in the locker room with Bryant. And look, I mean, if the Steelers wouldn't have been able to get a third round pick for Bryant, you know, he's probably still in Pittsburgh right now, and you know, and that's probably on top of them maybe drafting another wide receiver at some point, and then you just, you know, let him play out and then let him leave. Hopefully he has a great season and he leaves and you get a third round compensatory draft pick that way. I think that was originally the plan with Kevin Colbert and Martavis Bryant, but you know, when you get offered a cheeseburger today, you know, not have to pay for it till Tuesday, then you take it. And you know, I think he weighed the risk factor with Bryant. I think if you do look back at, I mean, let's face it. I mean, his Martavis Bryant's season last year was not great, by what we kind of were expecting when it comes to him. And you know, it all kind of makes sense now. And look, you hope for the best because, and like I just said a little while ago, if there's one player that you thought, man, this guy could arguably be the best deep threat in the NFL since a guy like Randy Moss, it's Martavis Bryant. But you know, depending on what happens this time around with whatever discipline he's facing, we might not see him on the field again. Or if we do, it might be a couple years down the line, a la Josh Gordon.
Right. That's exactly who I was going to bring up, Josh Gordon. But Gordon could be an example of somebody who hopefully has turned his life around. So, you know, my two quick final thoughts, you know, it was a good deal at the time it happened draft night to trade Bryant for a third. And if Bryant does get suspended, it's an even better deal for Kevin Colbert. So I didn't realize Rappaport tweeted something out. I want to read the tweet real quick because it's awfully cryptic and it's hard to really understand where he's going with this.
And he might not even know for sure.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's giving himself every single out here. But Rappaport tweeted about 2 hours ago, there is some issue with Martavis Bryant, but it's not clear if it'll cause a delay like last year before camp, a quick fix via paperwork, or a suspension. all was well when Bryant met at the NFL offices in late April. So, I mean, if it's a paperwork issue, I don't know how that would result in a suspension necessarily, but I guess we'll just have to stay tuned.
Well, something spurred the story, so, you know.
Sure,
You know, something along those lines. So, and look, we'll just watch and see how it ultimately plays out. And, boy, if the Raiders, I mean, what do the Raiders do if they lose him for the year? I mean, you almost have to sign Dez Bryant then, right?
Yeah, I think somebody made that comment. Because, you know, the receiver group, you know, Crabtree's in Baltimore. Amari Cooper's been up and down with his hands. They're going to need some weapons for Derek Carr. So, yeah, they got to, you know, Martavis was supposed to be that guy.
Yeah. All right. Moving on from Martavis Bryant, what direction do you want to go in now? I think the guy that I thought gave the best quotes over the course of this week talking about position coaches that kind of surprised me was defensive coordinator Keith Butler. Normally he's kind of vanilla and you know he knows not to give too much, but he actually gave some useful information, and we'll get to what he said about kind of Bud Dupree and the defense and the rest of the defense or some other individuals on defense here in a little bit. But you know, him basically breaking down what went wrong, you know, a couple times last year in that kind of that faux 4-3 or whatever you want to label it with the, you know, off the ball linebacker, I thought was interesting. And, you know, you were able to go right to some of the instances in the game against the Bears and I believe in the game against the Titans later in the season.
Yeah, I thought it was a very honest and transparent answer from Butler, and I certainly appreciated that. It's a little hard to describe, obviously, you know, audio, so I encourage you guys to try to check out the post. Just type in film room on Steelers Depot, and I think it'll be the first or second article that comes up. But basically, you know, the Steelers, since Butler came in, this isn't a brand new thing. People act like this is something that's brand new. It's been done since Butler, since week two against San Francisco back in 2015. But it's that over front where, you know, the backside end comes in place, the strong side three tech, and you get one, you know, backside outside linebacker off the ball. It looks like a 4-3. You can call it whatever you want. We've called it a bunch of stuff. But basically, you know, the idea behind it was that you get a big defensive end, you know, Tuitt or Hayward on a tight end and try to create a mismatch at the point of attack. But the issue that Butler was having and the way offenses would respond to that is, you know, when the Steelers would line up in that look, the opposing offense would just motion the tight end away, and they would now reduce the Steelers' front, make it an under front, and now they're weak, and then you get a tight end on the outside linebacker instead, so it defeated the purpose of the matchup. So I thought an issue was the Steelers' lack of response to that. They really didn't have any obvious response. There was no shift in the linebackers or defensive line to respond to that motion, and it hurt them a couple times. So whether that was on the front side where they were outnumbered and getting some bad matchups, or on the backside where now you have your backside defensive end basically playing outside linebacker and playing contain. And that's obviously going to be dangerous when that guy's asked to play in space he's not comfortable with. So, you know, some of the Butler said that they're going to continue to use. It's going to be situational, which, and from what I can tell, it's mostly against 12 and 13 personnel and kind of these heavy personnel groupings. It's not going to be used against something like 11. I thought it was just a good, honest answer, and it was good to put the film to it.
Yeah, absolutely it was. You know, why not just shift over a gap?
You're right. Either with the linebackers and the defensive line, you don't have to do a full shift, but, you know, don't go in that underfront. At least try to even it back up.
Right. Now, I guess you could leave yourself a little bit more vulnerable to the backside, right?
Yeah, but, you know, you got to pick your poison, and I'd rather, you know, not be weak to the strong side, and I'd rather be, you know, have the numbers even on the backside.
Right, absolutely, and I think the biggest beef, or perhaps I didn't get a chance to read all the comments in that post, is, you know, okay, they do it to you once, they do it to you twice, you know, what are you doing to prevent it, you know, from happening down the line, you know, because people are going to pick that out like, you know, the offensive coordinators and all are going to pick that out like a sore thumb, especially if they have a tight end, you know, that can, you know, work on a little bit smaller body or get out there in space.
Yeah, but, you know, it's something that's really feast or famine, because there's been plays, even that Chicago game, there were plays where it was really effective. You know, I think they had, like, six plays where it went for 3 yards or less, and there were, like, five plays where it went for 8 yards or more, and some of them went for 20 and 30. So, you know, it's really a heightened one-gap penetrate, get up field, and if you get the initial penetration, you can wreck the play. If you don't, or if the offense responds correctly, then you're going to be in some trouble. So, you know, Butler's used it occasionally. It's not been a staple of the defense. Actually, I think it was used less in 2017 than it was 2016. But when we talk about the 4-3 stuff, people are going to probably bring it up like it's brand new. I've seen those comments. This is the new look Steelers defense. No, it's been done since 2015, you know, off and on. It's situational. Even Butler said it's usually a response. It could be a call or just a natural response to how the offense lines up. So, you know, we hear this 4-3 stuff for anyone listening. It's not brand new. We've covered it before, been there, done that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think there's posts going back, you know, at least what, ahead of last year?
2015, week two was the first time we talked about it.
Right, on that. So, but, you know, the biggest thing is to get a coach to confirm and tell you where, you know, give you keys of where to look, you know, and mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting from Butler. Something else Butler said that was a bit, maybe too honest, a little bit wacky and all, you know, obviously kind of related to. And look, this has been a little bit of a surprise to me right from the get-go. You know, there were the early reports that T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree were going to switch sides or were working on different sides. And then we got into the talk of, all right, is this just getting them, to get used to spending some time on opposite sides. Obviously, you know, I thought that, boy, you know, if they did switch sides during the 2018 season, that still it wouldn't be predominant. I don't know. You know, we're getting to the point now where it certainly does sound like, you know, this is going to be how they're going to line up predominantly this year, and that's with Bud Dupree being looking at the back of the defense on the right side and T.J. Watt being on the left side. And, you know, I'm fine with that, I guess. But, you know, I don't really quite get the reasoning behind it right now. And Keith Butler saying, well, the quarterback saw Bud Dupree coming last year. That just doesn't cut it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it just sounds like a bad excuse. You know, it's not like left outside linebackers can't be successful pass rushers. There's so many examples of that. You know, and I think Matthew Marks, he has an article today expanding on Butler's comments about that, and they're talking about basically that Dupree was overrunning the quarterback, and you know, quarterback was able to step up and all that, which is true. I mean, it's pretty obvious on the tape, but I don't feel like that's a left-right issue. You know, you're not going to be a bendier guy on the right side than you are on the left. You know, that's an issue of Dupree not having a good counter, tackles, you know, expecting what he's going to do, and then some things that are outside of his control with some poor kind of rush lane balance and gap integrity that's created some running lanes for the quarterback that probably robbed Dupree of some sacks and some additional pressures. But it's nothing to do with a left-right thing. So I feel like it's a little bit of a desperation move at this point, which is certainly a concern.
Yeah, and look, we know, I mean, you know, Chuck Smith's been predicting that Bud Dupree is going to break out for the last 2 years, and you know, he was probably too brutally honest maybe this last go around in his talk with Pete Prisco, talking about, you know, this guy's got to, I mean, just look at TJ on the other side. He's got count. You know, he's got moves. Mm-hmm. Bud doesn't. I mean, you're not all of a sudden going to create counters just being on the other side,
right?
You know, yeah. I mean, what's going to prevent? I mean, look, he's got a great first step. He's always had a great first step. You know, Bud, a good get off, but you know, he relies too much on that. When he gets run up the edge, you know, we've seen. I think a great example last year was in really was it? It was week one, right? With T.J. Watt. Run up the edge by Thomas, arguably the best left tackle in the game for the last 10 years. And, you know, he's able to counter and spin back off of that and get in on, what was it, a half sack or something like that in that game. You know, look, you're obviously not going to be able to spin back to the quarterback every time. But, you know, if they're so fearful of you getting the edge, then that should be your first, you know, if you're looking at that a tackle that has a good kick slide or a good first punch and then kick out to that side. You've got to, in your mind, and not it's got to come without you even thinking about it. Be able to either spin back off of that to the inside or you know, cross chop or something to get yourself worked up back to the inside. Some of the things, some of the better stuff that we've seen Bud Dupree do back to the inside have come via like twist and stunt stuff where he's getting help elsewhere. And I just don't, and hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully we're sitting here saying, man, what a heck of a great decision that was to move Bud Dupree over to the to the other side there. But the it just does not make sense, at least to me. And then he goes on. Then Butler goes on and is quoted as saying, "Won't be as useless." I bet he wishes he had those words back.
Yeah, it's that old Southern boy honesty coming into play when it probably shouldn't have. Yeah, it's certainly interesting to say the least. You know, I don't think Dupree's bend is terrible. It's certainly not Von Miller, but he's not Jarvis Jones where he's windmilling upfield the whole way. He's just getting up a little bit too far, and when he does win with that first step, he does have some trouble cornering because he's a bigger guy and a tighter guy because of that size. Again, like you said, I think the issue is just not, you know, there is no counter. The tackle can expect the speed rush every single time. And if Dupree wants to try something inside, it hasn't been super effective. So, you know, it's just tackles anticipating what he's going to do. And I hope that they switch him back and forth because one of the benefits, you know, when this report first came out a couple weeks ago was that they're going to kind of just flip occasionally and that'll help create new matchups and tackle won't be able to get a better read and have to prepare for both guys. So I hope that this isn't permanent in the sense that they're not going to play their side of the ball, you know, 90% of the time. They're not going to flip. I mean, I think they're both going to benefit by, you know, being able to play both outside linebacker spots. So hopefully that'll be the case. And that's going to help both those guys, you know, Watt and Bud Dupree. My other concern is that, you know, if Dupree is going to be predominantly the right outside linebacker, I mean, in Keith Butler's history all 3 years, the right outside linebacker has dropped about 10% more than the left outside linebacker. And, you know, one, that's going to take away more pass rushing opportunities for Dupree. And two, he's not as good in coverage as T.J. Watt. So is that going to be an issue there? That's another thing to consider.
Yeah, I mean, look, my hope now, I mean, I'm not going to say that you know, Dupree now isn't going to have line up predominantly on the right side now. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully they do switch him more. You know, hopefully he ends up with if it is predominantly with Dupree on the right side. Hopefully the margin, you know, hopefully the offset's not huge. Like you said, 90%, you know, around, you know, hopefully it's a little bit closer to balance. But look, I mean, this is something that's been kind of rumbling, I guess, since the start of OTAs and it's not going away. And it does sound like these guys are going to be, you know, switching sides, so to speak. So definitely something for you to watch for when they get into training camp when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. Look, you know, who was it? Kevin Green, I think not long ago in one of his interviews said something to the fact, like, you don't have to have many counter moves, but you better have one or two that you're very good at.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Know? I mean, you got to have the one, you know, your main move, then the counter off of it. And if you could do that, you know, James Harrison, he had his rip dip and a speed bull.
Right.
Two moves. That's all he ever did. But it was super effective because if one didn't work, he'd go to the other.
Right. I mean, even if you just have one move and you're extremely good at it, I mean, you're going to get a couple of sacks, you know, or at least some good pressures during a game using it. Did you watch that video I put in the that seven shots that I do on Sunday of Dwight Freeney?
I didn't, but I was just gonna bring him up.
But yeah, I mean that you. I mean go watch it. No, look, it's easy to say. Just go watch all the moves that this guy makes. You've got to know how to be able to set those up. You've got to be able to know the keys of when a tackle's left hand comes up or he attempts. It's got to almost come like second nature breathing. you know. Unfortunately, with Bud Dupree, and this has been really it for him since he came out of college, he's been more athlete than he has been pass rusher.
Yeah, for sure. And now, and you know, I don't want to get too freaked out about it, but you know, some of the injury news that's come out is that Dupree, and I don't know if this is a re-aggravation or something new. I don't know if it's major. I don't know if it's minor, but something with that shoulder, which plagued them all last year, came up in minicamp and held them out for at least a day or two.
Yeah, so I mean that's something else to watch for as we get into training. I mean, look, he's got 6 weeks off now, but it was that shoulder that kept him out of the regular season opener last year, right?
Yeah, that shoulder was really bad. Again, it was, I think, against Chicago week three, he told Jeremy Fowler that he couldn't even lift his arm over his head. And I think that had a big reason, you know, to do with his issues last year. And he couldn't, you know, counter as well because he just could not convert speed to power. So he just had to be an outside rush kind of guy. So, you know, I'm willing to kind of use that as a bit of an excuse and understand why he struggled the way that he did. But obviously 2018, there's just no time left for excuses. You either got to put up or shut up.
I guess if there's one player not named Dirty Red that we hope to be more wrong about, it's Bud Dupree as far as his defense, right?
And I've been a Dupree fan from the get-go, and I was pounding the table for him last year saying this guy could be a double-digit sack guy. I mean, and I still have some optimism. I'm certainly nowhere near where I thought I was a year ago. I mean, this guy can be an effective pass rusher, and hopefully he's just able to stay healthy and, you know, prove us either right or wrong about it.
He's, you know, look, I mean, he just because of his get off and his ability to sometimes get to, we've seen some bend out of him. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen him take some decent flatten nicely, so to speak. You know, mm-hmm. So that should get him 3 sacks alone, you would think.
Yeah, it's there. It's not the best, but, you know, for his size, you know, he can bend a little bit. And I think some of the issues last year was that he would bend and he would almost get there, but there was some sort of breakdown elsewhere that gave the quarterback an escape line. You know, I did an article on it.
The quarterback saw him coming, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, again, that logic. I mean, it's true, obviously, if you're going to be on the left side, you know, you're not on the quarterback's blind side. But what are you going to say now? Is T.J. Watt not going to be an effective pass rusher because the quarterback can see him? Good pass rushers can get home even if the quarterback sees you, because when he sees you, it's at the last second, and you need to get nothing, no choice. You're gonna have to take the sack.
They see Von Miller coming, don't they?
Yeah, again, they see the left outside linebackers can rush as well as right outside guys. That's why right tackles have become really good pass protectors, because there's good pass rushers all over the formation, and you can't hide anybody. So I think it's kind of a weak excuse for Pittsburgh, to be honest with you.
All right, enough. We have beat on poor Bud Dupree quite a bit. So enough of that, and we'll try to stay off of them for the next 6 weeks until training camp gets underway and all. But those comments, boy, they sure did stick out like a sore thumb. What do you make of the talk of not only Butler but Tom Bradley as well, that they don't know who's going to be the free safety yet?
Yeah, and, you know, I guess that's pretty consistent with what they've said since, you know, the start of spring practice. And to be fair, you're not going to figure everything out with a couple of shorts and shells. You're going to have to go in games and see how guys perform there. It was a good article, it's in the Trib, I forget where it was, about Sean Davis. And Davis almost sounds frustrated with, I think the quote he said was like, I am paraphrasing here, but, you know, line me up wherever. Just tell me what my role is so I can focus on it. You know, he sounds even frustrated with the way it's been handled.
Or something like, give me time or something. I forget what the quote was. But
right. It was just basically, tell me what my role is so I can just do it and get good at it. And that's been my gripe with the way the Steelers have used Sean Davis this whole time. So, you know, I think what Burnett was running free safety, I guess if from some of the reports, it was kind of left and right, and then it was some reports said Burnett was kind of more the free safety. So it sounds like he was the guy, and we'll see what happens in camp.
Yeah, and I mean that's another thing that should stick out like a sore thumb, right? Right when you get to camp. Look, I mean, ideally, what you would like to see is them be able to put you know, either Burnett or Davis back there, depending on, you know, what they're lining up against, and be able to have the same level of play. You know, we've heard this for years. I mean, dating back to to Troy Polamalu and Ryan Clark about them talking about how they like how they like to train both safeties to play both spots and how they like to get in a position. But I mean, the fact of the matter is you just don't see that much. You know, you usually have one that predominantly plays free of the post, and then the other one if you're not in cover two type situations, down in the box.
Right. Now, I want to try to find the quote here, because I think it's a great way that you said it. But it's basically just saying, because, we've heard in the past that they consider those safety spots interchangeable, but sort of, but not really. And I think Sean Davis even said, again, that same Trib article, that, he hadn't played the position before. So that's kind of an admission that it's not as interchangeable as people might think that it is.
Well, I think, and this is something I've been meaning to do, and I think I did it on a limited basis way back when he was drafted. To find him playing probably some true post-free, safety, you probably have to go back to his freshman, sophomore year at Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it seems like, now I'm getting old, it seemed like he did. He saw a lot of time down in the box then, at safety. So, he's done it before, but I mean, just because you've done it before doesn't mean you're good at it. And he, because his final 2 years, or really final, I guess, season and three quarters, he was a corner at Maryland. I mean, this is another case of the Steelers having an athlete that really hasn't proven to play a position very well.
Yeah, that's been their draft philosophy, was take athletes and we'll try to coach them up, whether that's Bud Dupree or Artie Burns or, Terrell Edmunds can be the same case. And hopefully he has a better, quicker, path to the NFL and quicker NFL success. And Sean Davis is another name to throw in that hat. I have the quote here. It's from the Trib and Tim Benz, but this is first a statement, then a quote from Davis, but from Benz. Quote, Davis said he's never played the position, free safety, for an extended period here or in college at Maryland. Davis says, quote, I've got to learn it fast. I would like to know what I'm doing so I can just focus on one thing. So there's the state of the secondary right now.
They put a lot of emphasis, and look, I mean, it's still early on some of these picks and all like that, too early to pass judgment and all like that, but they put a lot of emphasis on character. They put a lot of emphasis on P-Spark scores. We can track all that. I mean, that's stuff we can put our hands on. Sometimes it makes you wonder, though, did they put a little bit too much emphasis on that? Maybe, not enough on players actually being able to show. And look, there's been, I think another thing that stuck out this week, Alex, and some of these coaches talking, and we heard it mentioned several times, is how these athletes, when they're in college, they only have, 20 hours of practice time, and three, two or three, four of those hours were eaten up by conditioning, weight room type stuff. So there's not a lot of teaching and technique that goes on in the college level, and that's understandable. And that when you get some of these guys in, you almost have to break them back down, back to basics again, and work on fundamentals, tackling. And boy, and one thing that we heard these coaches say, Tomlin and Butler this past week, is, oh, we're going to spend a lot of time on tackling during training camp. Well, okay, that's fine, because if you go back and look at some of these missed tackles the Steelers defenses have had for the last three, four, five years. I mean, it's nauseating sometimes. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to spend a lot of time with some of these live sessions, quote unquote, and that'll be another thing you'll be able to tell us. You've been to enough of these training camps over the years that you'll be able to say, man, they really are working on tackling this year. But here's the downside to that. If you have more of these live sessions, you're going to probably end up with more injuries.
It sounds like Tom Bradley's having a big influence in, because I honestly have never heard the coaching staff talk about the college hours and the fundamentals as much as they have these past couple of days. I don't know about you, Dave, but
that's why it stuck out. You're probably right. I know where you're going with this. I mean, this is a guy, Tom Bradley, that spent his. He knows. He's been there. He knows how much that stuff gets taught or doesn't get taught. You know, Randy Feetner, going back to his time in Memphis, he probably forgot. I mean, he probably forgot how many hours they're able to spend on that kind of stuff. And although, you know, you could say that Carnell Lake, coming out of UCLA not too long ago, he should have been able to know that kind of stuff, even though he spent, one season at UCLA. But, that kind of stuff does stick out.
Right, because I think that's probably one thing you could criticize the Steelers coaching staff in terms of the construction of it, is that it's a very NFL lifer staff. There aren't a whole lot of guys coming from the college ranks or guys that have been in the college ranks recently. Carl Dunbar was just there, but he spent a lot of time in the NFL. Darryl Drake's been in the NFL for close to two decades now. So maybe that's Tom Bradley grabbing Keith Butler by the ear saying, listen, these guys don't know what they're doing. We got to build them back up. I've coached college all my life. I've seen the game evolve. I've seen the issues. We have to kind of start from scratch with this approach. And maybe that's helped open their eyes up to this a little bit. So I forget the other point I was going to make. But
maybe the fact that Dunbar, and look, we've heard about, I think the thing that stuck out about Bradley so far is teacher. Mm-hmm. Look, I don't want to take anything away from John Mitchell and what he's done during his time in the NFL as a coach. Maybe John Mitchell's just not that good of a teacher overall for younger players. More of he's probably a lot more old school, my way, highway, and not so much this is the why you do it and all. Maybe today's NFL younger player coming out needs more the why and needs better teachers, and maybe that's a little bit of a glimpse into why we have a Tom Bradley on the staff now, why we have a Dunbar on the staff now. Maybe they are better teachers.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchell's done a great job with the young guys throughout his entire career, whether that's building the payword to it, Geisel, Hampton, I mean, the list goes on and on, but there's definitely a different style between Mitchell and Dunbar. Mitchell is the, we'll call it nice and say tough love approach to young guys, and Dunbar is definitely a little softer. They still demand a lot, the expectations are still high, but the approach is certainly different. So it's not a direct criticism on any of these guys that have been coaching the NFL for a long time. It's just, it's nice to get that perspective from guys that are just coming out of the college system and have spent a couple of years doing it. That can give you that perspective of what are guys really know and what don't they know when they come out of college. The other thing I was going to bring up was just that, I thought the media kind of spun the more tackling angle from Butler a little too much. They were trying to really get Butler to say what they wanted him to say, but Butler really just said, we're just going to keep working on tackling. So I don't, Steelers training camps are about as physical or more physical than probably any other camp in the NFL. So I don't really think they're going to do more tackling. They might change the approach and the way they teach it a little bit, but I think it's going to be about the same amount of tackling as it is every year.
Have you been happy with the amount of quote-unquote live sessions, if you will, what you've seen at training camp in the last, three, four years, whatever? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I've been happy with it. I haven't had any, never been an issue where I thought they weren't doing enough. And again, you listen to other teams around the league, the Steelers are about as physical as anybody. So again, maybe the approach can change a little bit. Maybe there's some more stuff where there's not to be live sessions where you can work on the fundamentals. I don't know. Again, new guys in the room hopefully can bring some new ideas, some new drills that can work on some things. But I mean, the Steelers go as hard as anybody in football, so it's hard to be too upset about it.
All right, wrapping up some other things to come out of the mandatory minicamp this week. A few dings here and there. You already mentioned Bud Dupree. We'll have to keep an eye on that. I think maybe Morgan Burnett maybe missed a little bit of time. One thing, Juju was back out there running around, and it sounds like Juju may have had that knee scoped. Whenever you can't get a definite no, or go ask Mike Tomlin, and then you ask Mike Tomlin and he says, I haven't really checked on that, then it sounds like there's some smoke, and wherever there's some smoke, probably some fire. But Juju expects to be a full go by the start of training camp. We'll see about Bud. I've got an old song for you to sing with me, Alex. Vance McDonald missed some practice time. E-I-E-I, oh no.
I am not going to sing that. That'll be a solo album from Dave Bryan.
I hear you. Look, I don't want to read too much into Vance McDonald being in sweats for one practice. But as I open... I guess they call it a lead, which I suck at writing. I said, look, anytime, you know, here's the way I open that post on McDonald. Players missing offseason practices due to minor injuries certainly isn't unusual. With that said, you certainly don't like to hear about a player with an injury history missing practice time to do due to any kind of ailment, even if it is considered minor in nature. I don't know what ails Vance McDonald. I don't know if Mike Tomlin just gave him a day off. That seems very uncharacteristic when it comes to a guy like as young still as Vance McDonald is. But look, I'm as bullish on Vance McDonald as probably anybody that you'll meet. But if he can't stay on the field, all that bullish, you know, thinking that this could be a career year for him is going to go out the window. I mean, the guy has had problems staying on the field his entire career. You know, look back at all the games he missed last year. Go back and look at his time at San Francisco. It's been one thing or another, a hip, a back, a knee, an ankle. You know, you could play operation.
I was just going to say that.
You know, on this guy probably, and get an anatomy lesson, or I bet Dr. Mel could, you know, tell us about all these things. But look, this guy has to stay healthy. If he stays healthy, he's going to have a career year just because he's on the field for all 16 games. And as you know, you go back to the playoff game against Jacksonville, and you know, you go back to some of the stats, how the Steelers offense performed, not only when McDonald was on the field last year in general, but in 11 personnel groupings. We talked about that recently. You know, let's just hope that this guy can stay, you know, together all year.
Well said, Dave. I don't have a whole lot to add there. Yeah, hopefully it was just a precautionary thing. You know, there's no reason to risk stuff and push stuff right now. In the spring, you got 6 weeks off to rest and recover. You know, and just to circle back to Juju, I mean, it sounded like he did have a scope or something, but he did get some work in OTAs, right? He was doing some individual stuff, if I'm not wrong about that. So, you know, I saw some headlines that made the injury seem a little scarier than what it appears to be.
I'm not sure. Look, I mean, I don't know how much during OTAs he wore a jersey. It doesn't sound like it was too often. In fact, when a photographer from one of the newspapers makes sure to snap a shot of both Cameron Hayward and Juju out on the field, to me, there's some significance there.
I saw a video of him doing some individual running, though.
Right, but that was this past week. I mean, had you right. seen it before this past week?
No, but I mean, if he's doing any sort of running in camp, then that's a good sign.
Right. And that's my point is, you know, we saw him doing individual stuff with a jersey on this past week. So that's nothing but positive.
Right. So I assume he missed the first week and they just were, you know, cautious with him. And they still are cautious with him. But if he's doing some running now, then...
Right. I'm not concerned about him. You know, okay. I just, you know, the thing is now, and he pretty much said he expects to be ready by the time, you know, a full go, whatever he's not doing now, he should be able to do, you know, 6 weeks from now, one would think.
Exactly. Yeah, I just saw, like I said, not us, but it was some headlines saying, you know, frustrating knee injury for Juju, which made it sound like it was a recurring, super... concerning thing, and I'm not particularly concerned about it.
Right. Anybody else dinged up that you know, we might have minor concerns? I think that's the most of there. I haven't, you know, do we know much about Tyson Alualu? I mean, have you seen any pictures of him?
I haven't, but I haven't really looked. I'm sure he's fine.
You know, maybe, look, I mean, we always say every year, well, we don't think the Steelers' active PUP list when they start camp is going to be very long at all. In fact, boy, it might not be any names on it, but inevitably we get there and there's like four names, and three of the names are like, oh Lord, how did that guy what happened, you know, that didn't allow, and there's gonna probably be a soft injury problem or two during, you know, these guys training during these next 6 weeks and all like that. So just keep your fingers crossed and move forward. Right now on the surface, and that's dangerous to say, it only looks like Jake McGee and Gerald Hawkins were the two off-season casualties, if you will. You
know, yeah. Who was on PUP last year? Do you remember who? Was there a big name on PUP last year?
Oh, geez, I don't remember, Alex.
There was a guy that failed his conditioning test. I forget the name, but it was like it was a futures guy or a UDFA.
I have to go back and pull that and have that for you by the next podcast. Some positive things. I don't know if it's how much hyperbole it is. Mason Rudolph supposedly had a great total combined off-season practice, if you will, and some, I guess, collective people who make it have a living of watching these practices during the offseason believe he can become the Steelers' number two quarterback.
Yeah, and it's what we've been talking about, you know, for a while now. Not that it's set in stone, and, you know, this is just shorts and shells, and Rudolph's got to translate that to the preseason and camp for the team to have that kind of confidence. But, you know, it's the same talking points I brought up before, is that rookies of today aren't the rookies that they were when Ben came out in 2004. They're not coddled. We've seen rookies be able to start and lead teams to success, and certainly guys that are capable to be the backup and ready to come in at a moment's notice. So, you know, there was a good article from Ed Bouchette that kind of delved into that. And you know, Bouchette even said, you know, if Rudolph becomes the number two, you know, Jones could still be the number three, which, you know, would make sense in the sense of, you know, the veteran guy, a good locker room presence, a good mentor for you know, Mason Rudolph, and because they don't have a true quarterbacks coach, would be another kind of ear that could really help out in that room. So, you know, all Bouchette was saying was don't be surprised by it, and that's what I've been saying since basically day one. I wouldn't be surprised by it either.
And look, I mean, I've obviously been more bullish on Rudolph than you have, you know, dating back. And look, I don't know how things are going to turn out for him, but I think even I'll be a little bit surprised if he's able to get that number two spot by the time the regular season opens, you know, barring injury. I mean, obviously, Landry Jones probably isn't awfully tough to bypass, but he does have the experience, you know, there. I mean, are you going to go into week, assuming Landry's on your roster, do you think you're going to be in a comfortable enough situation where Ben's your starter and you're going to dress Rudolph over Landry, you know? Mm-hmm. That just seems like a very tall task, if you ask me. And I can't help but go back and think back to, you know, back when Roethlisberger was drafted, the original plan for him all along was to be the number three.
Yeah, I know, but the times have changed so much. Rookies aren't treated the same way then
right,
as they are now.
But
rookies didn't play, no matter who you were, they didn't play a snap for Pittsburgh back then. Now they're starting.
Yeah, but I mean, you were paying Roethlisberger a whole hell of a lot more than you were paying Rudolph. Now, I mean, even if Rudolph was your first rounder this year, you're still paying, you know, the way to, you know, CBA and contracts for those players way back then. Yeah, there were probably a lot more incentive to get Roethlisberger to your number two, you know, long story short, as everybody knows, injuries played a factor into how that depth chart ended up working out in 2004. And probably a good time to quickly segue. I'm doing a lot of, you know, for the off-season post here, I'm going to be breaking down from a statistical aspect Roethlisberger's first 100 passes of his NFL career. Ooh. And actually it turns out to be like 112, to get some through the first five games there. But it's quite interesting to go back and watch kind of the maturation process of Roethlisberger. You know, he had to enter in that second half of that game against the Ravens in week two because of Tommy Maddox going down injured. And it's quite interesting just to watch the progression that happened. He wasn't good right out of the chute. I don't know how much you remember. He had like three interceptions in his first 69 pass attempts. Roethlisberger.
Well, he had what, two in that? I think he went like two touchdowns and two picks in that Baltimore game we first came in.
Yeah, I mean, and he probably should have had. I don't have my charting in front of me. He probably should have been picked like five or six times in like his first 80 or so passes. You know, I mean, it wasn't pretty. One thing that sticks out with me is he wasn't afraid to go downfield. Field early on in his career, throwing the ball sometimes where it didn't need to be thrown, but giving his receiver a chance to make some passes. There were some drops in there. He seemingly threw for the chains quite a bit, threw for the chains or past the chains on third downs quite a bit during his rookie season, those first five games. That's obviously a positive sign. I mean, you don't want him just giving up on third and eight and throwing 4 yards short of the chains there. So that's another thing that stuck out to me. And I think it was about halfway through that game against the Bengals in week four, and then definitely I think by week five, I think the game against the Browns is when it looked like the light started to come on for him. So I think it's just interesting to look back at, and then obviously everybody knows how his rookie season played out, you know, from there. But I hope people remember, God forbid, if the time comes sooner rather than later, with Rudolph and we're looking and examining his first 100 snaps or whatnot. I hope people remember that it wasn't smooth sailing for Roethlisberger during those first 100 snaps. I don't know what got me on that tangent there, but look for a post on that here in the next week or so on Roethlisberger and his early games there. But look, I mean, you spent a third round pick on this kid in Rudolph, and the talk has been that you think that he can. You know, that he you know, probably should have been a first or second round pick, and we're going to see how quickly he develops here. But let's get into training camp here and the preseason before we start talking about him potentially being the number two.
Sure. Definitely a long ways to go for Mason Rudolph. But my thought, and I'll wrap it up with this, is that if you believe, and the Steelers by their own admission basically do, that Mason Rudolph can be the heir to Ben Roethlisberger and can be a potential franchise and Super Bowl winning quarterback down the road, but that's the thought. If they think of him that highly, then I think they can think of him highly enough to win the number two quarterback job as a rookie. That's a smaller task than winning a Super Bowl and being the guy for the next 10 to 15 years. So I think that's the thought process, and if he plays well, we'll give him the chance to do it.
Normally, I cringe when Mike Tomlin or Art Rooney II or Kevin Colbert get on these Steelers Nation Unite chats with fans, because you know, normally you don't really get anything from them. Normally, most of the questions aren't good.
I feel like that's by design. So Tomlin doesn't have to give you any good information.
Actually, this time around, when Tomlin spoke, you know, there was actually a few decent questions. Either that, or maybe I'm giving too much credit to the questions and not Tomlin being a little bit more forthcoming than he is with the regular media. But he had a couple of nice answers this go around. One related to James Washington, where he said, "Look, this." He thinks the first thing that comes to mind when he thinks about James Washington is what great shape he is in right now for a rookie. And, you know, this time of year, Tomlin sends his younger players off with that pep talk about, man, when you show up at training camp, you better be in the best physical condition of your life. It appears as though James Washington is that now, and that's a very positive sign.
Pep talk, it's more like a mandate. It's a warning to these rookies, you better show up, because you have no idea what you're about to go through. But no, you're right, and that was something that Randy Feitner said the day that Washington was drafted. Feitner was asked about the concerns of Washington being a 4-5-4 guy, and can he really be that deep threat? And Feitner's response was that, you know, no, he's not a 4-4 type player, but because of his conditioning, he is always a 4-5 guy. What you get the first snap is what you're going to get the last step, and makes him better when other guys get worn down. And that was a story on TJ Watt last year. That was all the praise early in his career, was that because he came from a football family, he knew what to expect. He was in great shape, and the Steelers certainly, you know, used him as often as they could, including on special teams, which I thought was kind of a dumb thing to do. They're finally changing for this year. So, yeah, that's step one, though, and that's something we forget about with a lot of rookies, is that you got to be in shape because it's a whole new world, and it sounds like Washington is in excellent. I mean, Tomlin said he's in veteran shape, which is super high praise.
Exactly, and that's the type of stuff that you don't expect to come out of Tomlin's mouth this time of year when you talk about younger players.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing that, in talking about Washington, he kind of, I'm right about this either later today or over the weekend, talking about how kind of comparative to James Conner, how really, you know, James Conner's conditioning level last offseason wasn't great, and it ended up some soft tissue issues, not getting full probably complement of reps and all like that, and he went on to basically say James Conner's really learned from that. Isn't now come into shape, great shape this year. And not only that, you know, with Le'Veon Bell not being there, he's able to take advantage now of a lot of extra reps. And he said that's one thing, too, that about James Washington, that his conditioning has allowed him to get extra reps during this time of year that maybe he normally, a younger player, wouldn't be able to get. So I just think altogether that was just positive, just something else positive about James Washington. Now, hopefully this kid won't show up day one and miss the first 10 days because of a tweak in a hammy or something like that. But I found that interesting. Tomlin also spoke briefly about really contract negotiations about Le'Veon Bell. It was a little bit more forthcoming than I expected him to be as well, too. Now, he obviously didn't say whether or not we're going to strike a deal with Bell, this, that, and the other, but he essentially said, nothing's been going on with Le'Veon Bell as far as talks go recently. That's probably not a huge surprise. It's not breaking news, no. But he did say that at a later point in the summer, they expect to reconnect and have those talks. And, you know, that's not breaking news either, but at least it's good to hear the coach talk about that kind of stuff. And as we've kind of framed this thing the whole time, deadlines usually spur action. So, you know, closer we get to training camp here, I'm still optimistic that something to be worked out with Bell, but even I will be surprised if that indeed happens. It happens before July 4th. So, you know, just a quick little update from Tomlin when it comes to those two key things that came out of Steelers Nation Unite talk there with the fans. All right, anything else we need to get to for? But we threw it out there to some people on Twitter that we would take some questions today. Do you have anything you want to hit on before we do so?
Juju, you want to mention Juju and kick returns?
And look, I mean, that's probably not a huge surprise that he thinks he's going to be the kick returner this year. He is a little bit interested and concerned about the new kickoff rules, and you know, I don't blame him there. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see with only, you know, the max you can have is three guys back. But on the flip side, the opposition can't get the running start. You're not allowed to block until the ball either hits the ground or player touches it. So, you know, probably not a huge surprise there that Juju's set to be the kickoff returner, right?
Yeah. I mean, right now he's the only guy with really good experience. You know, they could get some other guys in there, and, you know, we'll see how maybe a Quadri Henderson, if he can make the team, or, you know, he's a little on the smaller side. But, you know, with these rule changes, I've heard the kicks are basically now kind of like punts, and so, you know, the skill set you need from the punt returner, kick returner is different. Punt returners, you want guys that are more, you know, good laterally. You don't have to be as tough. Kick returners got to be bigger, tougher, more straight line-ish, you know, and those kind of things. So, you know, I expect you to be the guy right now, but, you know, that could certainly change.
All right. Anything else you want to get to that we missed?
I think that's everything for me.
All right, let's go over a few quick questions we received. One from Xavier Goulden on Twitter. By the time the regular season starts, barring injury, how do you think the safety positions will work out? Davis free safety, Burnett strong safety, and Edmonds dime with a question mark. If I had to place a bet right now, I would think that that's the way it's going to go.
It was Davis at free and Burnett at strong. Is that
right?
Was that
right.
What it was? I'll play a little devil's advocate. I'll flip it. I'll say Davis is strong and they keep Davis where he's at. They're apparently comfortable enough to playing Burnett free to some extent. That's how you open up minicamp. So I'll say Burnett at free and Davis is strong at Edmondson the dime roll.
Okay. Obviously, hopefully you'll be able to provide some intel not too long into training camp starts on that. In the meantime, we've got 6 weeks to speculate about it. from Kalen Clark on Twitter, who is more likely to make the roster, Marcus Tucker or Eli Rogers? I'll let you go first.
I mean, if they're going to sign Eli Rogers, that means we want him to make the team. So I don't know how that's phrasing the question of if I'm basing, you know, the odds of Rogers being signed. I will go Eli Rogers, though, because I believe he will be signed at some point. He was at the Seagulls facility the other day, I believe, and talked to some reporters, I guess. So, yeah, I like Tucker. I think he's got a chance, but I think Eli has the better odds.
Look, Eli's still not a bad route runner. There's some things you would like him to be able to do, maybe more yak, maybe more understanding of what he sees. I think at times it's going to be a question mark coming off of this knee injury and all like that. You'd probably like to see him be able to contribute a little bit more on special teams, and maybe if he is on the roster, he is the punt returner this year. You know, we'll see. Marcus Tucker, it's a great story right now. It almost has a feeling, though, that maybe Marcus Tucker, assuming Rodgers is re-signed, it almost has a feeling that Marcus Tucker might have to beat out DHB.
Or become the sixth receiver and make him keep six.
Yeah, and that's... Boy,
just tough. Which is tough.
That's tough.
I feel like DHB is making this team. I mean, you heard Daryl Drake praise him the other day. I don't think you want to lose Man and DHB in 1 year. And DHB can give you so much everywhere. I mean, he's a guy that can just do it all.
What are the upsides? What are the ceilings for both these players in Tucker and Rogers in comparison with each other? And does it matter?
Well, I think Tucker can do a little bit more in the sense that he can do some return stuff like Eli. He can play theoretically after camp because he's getting more work in the slot this year. He can play all three receiver spots. He's been primarily an outside guy. He can be a gunner. He can be a better cover guy in special teams. Rogers is kind of more defined as a typical slot receiver who's better in the slot and gives him some good depth there, slash punt returner. So, you know, Tucker is kind of like a mini DHB. So, I mean, you make a good point about that. Rogers is your typical slot receiver. So just kind of pick your poison based on, you know, team needs and the like.
We don't know much about Marcus Tucker in the NFL level. We know, obviously, a little bit more about Eli Rogers. Which one, if you had to bet, was the better combative catcher, would it be?
We just haven't seen a ton out of Tucker. I don't know. I maybe I'd lean Rogers, but I kind of leave that as an incomplete.
Right. I mean, we don't know, but I mean, Eli Rogers is not known as a combative catcher yet, right?
Yeah, but when you play in the slot, you do have that mentality, and while his frame gives him some limitations, he's used to kind of playing with those super contested waters. So, I mean, it's not foreign to him.
Do you view this as an either or battle?
Well, I mean, again, if Rogers makes it, Tucker's got to be, I think, the number six. So in that sense, they could both make it. But also, what are the odds that they keep six and Tucker is that number six?
Definitely a fun one to watch there. I mean, especially with there being so much buzz about Tucker this offseason. And look, I mean, Eli Rogers isn't even under contract right now. So got to keep that in mind as well, too, here. Kalen also asked, who will have the higher percentage of snaps taken in the slot, assuming health, between James Washington and Juju? I think that's an easy one. I think it's Juju.
Yeah, Juju slam dunk.
Another one from Brandon Hazlett, I think. on Twitter. How will James Washington be able to adjust to to the NFL? If I've understood your profiles on him, it seems like he was mostly a deep threat. Will he be asked to do more, and will he be able to do that? Okay, here's the thing. Go back and watch. I mean, I've got all the explosive catches from the last couple of years up in a couple of posts on Steelers Depot. They're not all deep threats. They used him quite a bit on some of those slants and all, and some outs where he would break some tackles there. So I will say this. I thought when Marcus Wheaton came out of Oregon State, I thought he was a better route runner than James Washington coming out. But that, it's just because I don't think we've seen James Washington asked to do a lot of that. Maybe he didn't have the kind of coaching when it comes to that. I'm not saying that James Washington can't or won't become a better – look, I'm bullish on James Washington. I really like the kid, and as Alex and I have said several times, that there's one wide receiver I think in this year's draft class that I think you really know what you're getting based on what he did in college is James Washington. So no, I don't think he's mostly a deep threat. I think he'll be asked to stretch the field quite a bit when he's out on the field. But I also think, look, one of the things that we probably was a drawback about Martavis early on in his career was the fact that what can he do 10 yards from the line of scrimmage and end, and we just didn't see him contribute a lot in that way. All right, your turn.
No, I think you said it well, Dave, and I have a fire whistle going, so that's probably a good thing that you went into the deep dive that you did. I think Washington
run.
Yeah, this is how I die. I think Washington can be the more complete receiver, and make more of that immediate impact at all levels of the field rather than Martavis Bryant. But, I mean, he's primarily that deep threat because they need that guy that'll stretch the field vertically better than Juju, help out AB a little bit. So that's going to be Washington's primary role is that deep threat Z receiver.
What did you think about my comparison about Marcus Wheaton being a better route runner than coming out than James Washington?
No, I think that's totally fair. I think, the offense Washington played in, made it less of an importance for the nuances. I think Wheaton probably played in the slot more and definitely profiled more of a slot receiver. So no question about that Wheaton was a little bit more refined. But I think Washington can get there.
And now one thing we have, there's stats back. He made some talking about James Washington, he made a lot of combative catches. That's one thing that kind of attracted, I think, the Steelers to Juju too, coming out of USC. I mean, these guys are almost, I don't want to say carbon copies, talking about Juju and James Washington, but they're not far off, right?
Yeah, in terms of overall profile, height, weight, speed, competitiveness, toughness, in a lot of levels they are similar, but James Washington has to be that vertical threat, and Juju, is kind of like that, but not totally, not that true Z receiver. Definitely got better on the slot than on the outside. Washington, if Washington is a carbon copy of Juju, through and through, and they are both or neither are a significant deep threat, that's going to create some big problems for the Steelers offense. So, if Washington can have that defining trait of being that true vertical threat, perfect. If not, then it's going to be an issue.
All right, from Renegade, at Midnight Rider _ on Twitter. Where do Yens feel that Ben ranks right now all time? I saw a list on the NFL that had the top 16 all-time quarterbacks, and they didn't even have him on the list. I think they got that wrong. Your take. Jeez.
Yeah, that's tough. I haven't thought. Have you thought about it at all?
Yeah, I haven't even thought about it. Where is he on something? He's up there on. He's gonna pass, I think, Elway on one of the all-time passer lists this year in one statistical category. Let's see some of the all-time passing leaders here. Just in passer rating alone. Ben Roethlisberger is ninth for his career, it looks like. Aaron Rodgers is tops there. Passes completed all time. Ben is eighth overall right now, it looks like. Passing yards, Today's NFL is a little bit different. 51,000, over 51,000. He'll pass John Elway soon. Ben is eighth overall there. Passing touchdowns. Where is Ben on that list here? Ben is ninth overall all time on passing touchdowns. You know, there's been some great quarterbacks over the years, but, I mean, I think putting him in the top 15 right now all time, is that a stretch?
Well, let me ask you this, and maybe the answer is a quick yes, I'm not sure, but has Ben a first ballot Hall of Famer whenever he's eligible to you? So you're pausing a little bit, you're not...
No, I think so, but I mean, I think it's because I think there's because several factors play into it. I mean, look, I mean, the recency with today's NFL and having the highlights instantly available for these guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, make it something that you can touch and feel. Just because Ben has made some of the plays that he's made during his career, and it's become a, well, that's just Ben being Ben. Is another motto that will instantly, well, it just, you know, it's an instant argument. You know, look at the plays Ben's made, mm-hmm. you know, that other quarterbacks don't made. That alone becomes its own argument into itself. Ben has won how many championships?
Right.
I mean, that automatically comes into play before you even get into the stats. So, yeah, I think he is a first ballot guy now. I do.
Okay, yeah, no, I think he is too. But my question, I guess, was if the answer was no or maybe, then, you know, and this is a general way to do it, you would slot him behind all the first ballot, you know, quarterbacks in history. I mean, you don't have to put him behind every single guy, but that kind of gives you a baseline. But I just didn't know what your take was on that. I haven't thought about it too much. You know, I don't come up with these big lists because – I mean, it's just so difficult to try to, you know, who's better, Warren Moon or John Elway or Jim Kelly. You know, it's just what criteria do I use to decide that? So I'll go broad, you know, obviously don't hold me to it, but I'll say Ben's like top 20.
Yeah, I mean, top 20, yeah. I think when you look at some of these all-time lists, if you want to go by stats and all like that, then
the stats obviously are going to help out the modern era guys.
Sure. Absolutely. But, you know, on the flip side, too, and you talk about the Hall of Fame, I think you could pull Joe Yenzer, Steeler fan, off the street in Pittsburgh and him come give you a very good argument of why Ben should be first ballot Hall of Famer.
And I think he is. I think he will be. I mean, I think, you know, I know there's factors about class and whatever, but if you're a first ballot Hall of Famer at quarterback, no less, those other factors don't matter. If you're good, you're good. You get in right away.
I mean, look. I mean, are you? I mean, look. He's got two more championships than Dan Marino. I mean, Drew Brees got what? One more than Drew Brees. I mean, there have been some great quarterbacks over time. And when you look at the Montanas, you look at Fran Tarkenton was his own different kind of quarterback. You know.
Mm-hmm.
John Elway, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, probably more of a modern era John Elway, right?
Yeah, there you go.
It's a decent question. Look, it's going to be one, I'm sure it's going to be argued for quite a while and forever. It seems like maybe Ben's been, you know, underrated or what have you when it comes to these lists and all. So, from Robert Gallus on Twitter, does the Steelers not committing to Sean Davis starting at free safety open the door to Edmund starting the season? I think a lot's going to happen for Edmonds to start the season at either position.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Edmonds plays that dime role. I think they kind of bring him along a little bit more slowly than they did a TJ Watt. And I think it's just a question of where Burnett and Davis lining up, free or strong, not a question of are they starting.
I think the biggest thing maybe to be concerned about is just the pause that they're being well, we don't know which guy is going to, you know, what's Sean Davis going to be. You know, I think that gives you the biggest pause. And look, I mean, just because he's a former second round draft pick from 3 years ago doesn't mean he should be handed a job. But you would hope that he's going to have a starting job because of that. This year, if not, I mean, you put your best players out there to give you the best chance to win, mm-hmm. and boy, it will be a huge scarlet letter, so to speak, if Sean Davis is not a starter this year.
Yeah, but even in that same interviews the Butler's giving, he was speaking highly of Davis. It was just
right.
You know,
he talks about he has range. You know, he's an athletic.
I think Butler said like we know he can play. We know right. SD can play.
Right.
So.
We would be shocked if he's not one of those two safeties out there.
Yeah, for sure.
And then when you go out and you sign a guy like Morgan Burnett, even though he didn't break the bank with the deal, you know, the 3 years and his veteran leadership and ability to communicate and yada, 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 he should be the other one.
Mm-hmm. That, especially at least week one. I mean, stuff can change midseason, but week one.
Absolutely.
At least.
All right, from Travis Herko on Twitter. If Rudolph does earn the number two spot behind Ben, who do you cut, Jones for the cap space or Dobbs to keep an experienced veteran? I'm not sure I understand the end of that. I'll tell you this: you're not cutting Jones just because you're going to save the cap space.
Mm-hmm.
If you really like what you see from Mason Rudolph from the whatever 15 practices or whatever we just saw conclude. And on into training camp and the preseason. If this guy just is everything you imagine and more, and you have no issue with Mason Rudolph being your number two, and it's not even close over Landry Jones, then I'm doing my best to try to trade Landry Jones for a fourth or more. And if I cannot get that, I don't think I'm cutting Jones flat out, okay? At worst, he's going to be my number three. But if Rudolph does everything that you want and more, then I'm doing my best to parlay Landry Jones into something like a third or a fourth. And if I can't get that, then I'm keeping him. I'm keeping him to be my number three. Otherwise, no, that's the way I go for it. I'm not cutting Jones just to cut him.
I think a month ago I would have had a different answer. I did have a different answer, and I said, you know, you cut Landry Jones. I think I've wrestled with that a little bit more. I agree with you that I would at least entertain the idea of trading him. I don't think you're going to get a third or a fourth for a guy in last year's deal, career backup. You know, I think that conversation starts at a fifth, and if you can get a fifth or a sixth, you know.
Never with Jedi Colbert. He's a witch. I'm telling you, he's a witch.
Folkland calls again. Says, hey, we'll give you another third. We'll try it again.
Look, a lot of things can happen, right, between now and, I mean, what if Derek Carr goes down? I hate to use Oakland as an example, but, I mean.
Oh, I know.
What if a starter goes down somewhere around league? I mean, we never thought we would be having this conversation about Landry Jones 2 or 3 years ago, and it goes back to the conversation kind of we've had, you know, various times over the course of last year. Where does Landry Jones rank in backup quarterbacks around the league? He's not in the bottom third of the backup quarterbacks in the league. He's in the top third, and you can make an argument maybe behind Foles, and I don't know who else you want to throw on the list there. McCarron, I don't know. But he's got to be, if you're to rank all the quarterbacks currently in the league, starters and backups combined, he's got to be in the top 40, right? Easily.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere around there, top 40, top 45. I mean, I don't want to get too bogged down. And I mean, the first word is top, but the second word is still backup.
You're not going to put Landry Jones in the top. I mean, you think if push comes to shove, you could name 44 other quarterbacks or 40 other quarterbacks around the NFL you'd rather have start a game than Landry Jones?
Well, I mean, you're adding the whole rookie class into it, so you got a bunch of those rookies that are coming in that are right now currently number two, number three,
sure.
You know, they're going to ascend. You know, Sam Darnold's running number three in Jets camp right now. You take all three quarterbacks in Jets camp, you know, McCown, Bridgewater, and Darnold over Landry Jones. So, you know, I mean, there's that to be factored in. I mean, but okay.
And look, McNown's a great name to throw out there, too. I mean, because, you know, there are a lot of people probably, you know, Foles and him. You know, you could say, well, I definitely want both those guys maybe more than Landry.
Yeah, I mean, there could be interest in Landry Jones. I don't deny that. But I mean, how often do you see a third getting dealt for a guy, you know, backup like that? I mean, you see some of these camp deals that go for fifth, sixth round picks. But anyway, I don't want to get too super bogged down in that. So to my answer and my point, you know, I can definitely, and I didn't realize this as much before, but I can definitely see the value in keeping Jones as the number three, just because the relationship with Fietner and Ben and the quarterback's coach, and you could still theoretically try to hold on to, you know, Josh Dobbs, and you know, who knows? I mean, if, you know, you keep Dobbs in the practice squad, and if he tries to get poached, maybe you bring him up, and maybe then you cut Landry. I don't know. I mean, you could go a couple different ways with it. So I'm not as... I don't have a concrete answer, but I'm not as dead set on, okay, cut Landry Jones if he's not the number two and keep Josh Dobbs. So, you know, I could hear either argument of it, I guess.
Right, and I'm indifferent to how this works out, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, I would like – it would be a positive sign if it come week one of the season, we're talking about, boy, Mason, what a great – off season and preseason he had, and man, he's already number two. Boy, that's got to make you feel good, because you might not even need this guy for four more years, whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
That's a good problem to have. On the flip side, I'm not going to be upset if Landry's number two and Dobbs doesn't make the 53. You know, then we'll get into arguments. Will Dobbs clear waivers, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not a big deal. I'm going to be indifferent to the entire argument from here on out.
I don't know who I'd go with. I mean, let's not forget about Josh Dobbs, though. Let's see what he can do. He's coming into year two. You know, Landry Jones, it's going to be Landry Jones' last year as a Steeler. So, if you think Dobbs can hang around for a couple of more years, then maybe you consider dumping Landry. But like you said, good problem to have.
Right, and I'm not going to be upset either any way this thing turns out at all. And I don't think fans should either. But, I mean, look, I mean, it does make you wonder some of these reports about, hey, maybe Rudolph can be the number two. So we'll see. Plenty of time to worry about that. From David O. David O. also... Man, what a creep. That guy picked me and my wife up in D.C., drove us all the way to the Baltimore airport just so we didn't have to worry about going to Union Station and me being a wreck trying to figure out, you know, all those people there, trying to figure out all that situation. David also obviously does a lot for the site as well, too. If you're not following him on Twitter, @SubBurger. On Twitter as well, too. So I want to give David a quick shout out there. He asked, what, in your opinions, would be the best way to deploy TJ Watt and Bud Dupree this season? I think, David, we obviously talked quite a bit about that. Look, I you know, the closer you can get to 50-50, I think, on either side, I'd be happy with.
Yeah, maybe not even 50-50, but just showing that they are switching guys, you know, a couple series or two during the game just to give that different look, I think would be nice, because I think there's a lot of value in that. That's what they talked about, like, on, I think, the first day of OTAs was the value in giving that different look, creating different matchups and forcing tackles to prepare for both and not just one guy and the same guy, you know, time and time again. So I'm with you. I think that's a good way to explain it.
You know, the best way to deploy T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree is whatever way is going to get the most pressures and quarterback sacks this year.
Spoken like a true head coach. Very coach speak there.
Okay, thanks for all the questions there that we got. Sometime today I hope to put the second half of the John Bostic coverage. What did you think about the second half contextualization of that?
I think there's a lot of targets that aren't targets that are getting unfairly counted against John Bostic.
Right. I mean,
and that's not you. That's PFF.
Right. That's PFF. But some improvement in there, though, a little bit, right? I mean, a little bit more positives than the first half, or no? Same takeaways?
Yeah, it's similar. Again, I think I have a good feel for Boston because I've seen, you know, going back to when he was first signed, seen so much of him. Some of those plays I've seen before. But, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, better in zone than man. Good instincts, can rally on the football, a good tackler in space, gets depth in zone well, reads route concepts pretty well. But, you know, if you get him exposed in man-to-man, then you're going to have some issues.
All right, I think we've gone 80 minutes today. Wow.
Also, Sammy Coates was on PUP last year. I looked that up. Sammy Coates was on PUP.
Was he the only one?
Kanan Severn was on there because he's the guy that failed his conditioning test. I believe those are the only ones, but I didn't look too deep into that.
Yeah, that's starting to ring a bell now. Boy, what a year! What a difference a year makes from this. And look, we're gonna be, you know, we're singing some positives here about this year's team. We were singing some positives about last year's team, and boy, it just goes to show you how quickly these rosters can change and everything. And next year we'll probably say, boy, can't believe, boy, we were talking about how positive this or that was last year. I tell you,
Kobe Hamilton, Colin Holbrook both yesterday.
Yeah, holy moly. Yeah, we were talking about both those guys a little bit last year, and both of them are without work right now. That's for sure. Okay, hopefully we entertained you and amused you like clowns today, and we hope to do that for the rest of the remainder of the 6 weeks of the offseason on SteelersDepot.com as well. We will try to get as creative as possible during the next 6 weeks, and that's very hard at this time of year, but we will find a way. We're not going to make excuses. The standard is the standard when it comes to the site there. I'm sure Alex will be joining me quite a bit more during the next 6 weeks on the podcast as well. Let's see. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You feel sorry for us over the next course of the next 6 weeks, want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Alex, appreciate you sitting in both days this week, and we'll be back probably on Tuesday finding something else to talk about. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.